And Fast Money does start right now. Live from the NASDAQ market side, I am Brian Sullivan, in for Melissa Lee. And your traders on the desk tonight are Tim Seymour, Karen Fineman, Dan Nathan, and Guy Adami. Tonight, it just keeps getting worse for investors in semiconductors. The semi slammed again, on track for the worst month in more than a decade. But one top technician says the pain may be over, and he'll tell you what names he's buying now. From a semi slump to a social sag, people are fleeing Facebook. We'll tell you what's hot and what's not and what it means for these high-flying stocks. But first, we are in our worst slump of the year for stocks, and it got worse today. The Dow falling 237 points on a late-day slide. Bond yields, they moved down again. Buyers moving in. The averages ended on their lows of the day, and with heavy volume, never a good sign. But investors have been running for safety. Real estate at a record high, up 17% this year. Consumer staples and utilities both up 11% in 2019, also both near their highs. Here's the question. What are these runs, Guy Adami?
Yes, sir.
A buy in utilities, a buy in real estate, a buy in bonds, an inverted 3-month and 10-year bond. What does that tell you about the state of investors, the psychology of the market?
It means there's further, in my opinion, again, it means it's great to have you back again. We're going to have you tomorrow. It means there's further pain ahead in the S&P. And I think I've been pretty consistent on this. I think we're going to 2,650 or so in the S&P, about 150 or so S&P handles from here. I think that's relatively benign, and I think that would be very, very healthy for the broader market. It says to me that investors are looking for safety. I think they go into the wrong places. But I'll say this. If you are looking for stocks that have already had a 10% move to the downside, I give you no further than the one we power pitched last week, and I got voted for yes across the board.
It was yes across the board.
It was Alphabet, and if you look, Alphabet actually had a decent day until late when everything got dragged.
Okay, we led the show with Bon Jovi. I'll give you another one, Runaway, because you just said that investors were running to the wrong areas.
Right.
Why are they the wrong areas, and what are the right areas?
Well, I mean, if you look at, you know, utilities, I think, have gotten way ahead of themselves. I understand why they would go there based on where 10-year yields are, but I think it's the wrong place at the wrong time. And if you go into Procter & Gamble, if you think there's safety in a name like P&G, I just point you to a 23 times forward P.E., and say, why would that stock in any environment trade at that multiple, least of which the environment we find ourselves in now?
So if 226 on the 10-year tells you exactly what markets are not excited for and for growth. And if you actually look at bond yields, we've broken through significant support. And it really doesn't look good here. So defense right now is certainly in yield plays. And those that give you some kind of relative increase over the 10-year, I would go to an AT&T and names that also have big balance sheets that people were very worried about in a rising debt environment. I think it's actually a place where their business looks a lot better. But be clear, you know, consumer confidence was out today. It was kind of a head fake. We were at 3-month highs. But if you look at those ISM numbers last week, that's really what put the bond market into a buying frenzy. And again, yields are going lower. People are continuing to dump money into U.S. to play defense, along with the dollar, which continues to rally. And none of this is good for risk. To be clear, we're talking about playing defense. People are playing defense, in a sense, with stock markets only 3% from all-time highs, and yet this is not what the bond market is.
Karen, there seems to be one very simple and very important question in bond yields. Are bond yields moving down because people are afraid of a global slowdown, and so they're just kind of fleeing into treasuries? Or are they moving down because there's so much capital around the world that there's no place else to put it? And I say that because we're seeing bond yields move down in countries like Germany and Japan as well.
Right. Well, it could be both, right? I think part of it is definitely because people are afraid of a slowdown. I mean, I know I'm afraid of it now as the trade war, I don't know what else to call it now, but a trade war drags on. It's not just that a fix can fix things right away and no damage has been done. I think there is starting to be real damage done as companies try to position themselves. I mean, it's not so easy to move your supply chain. That's very difficult to do, but it's hard to know about how much should you be spending? What should you be looking for at the top line and not be conservative, right? And that sort of starts a vicious cycle of conservatism, lower spending, and that's kind of bad for everyone, and that plays into bond yields being lower because people are afraid of growth slowing. I'm afraid of it.
Yeah, so your question is whether it's a reflection on growth. I mean, all you have to do is go look at Germany and you have to look at Japan, and we know that growth has been really weak. We know that their growth has been downgraded on numerous occasions, and we know where their U.S. or their treasuries or their equivalent of treasuries are trading. A lot of them are negative. So when you think back to the fall, when it looked like the U.S. economy was ready to take off, we had the 10-year treasury yield at what? 3.25, something like that, looking like it was going to break out or something like that. So here we are now basically at 2.25, and all the things that Karen just mentioned are starting to weigh on global growth, specifically our country.
Dan, the reason I asked that question is we've got to remember one very simple fact. Bond yields also moved down at the beginning of the year when stocks were doing well. The bond move down has been a continuation of a trend. It hasn't just been a three-week phenomena like we have seen with the stock weakness.
Well, I think with stocks, though, in the beginning of the year, we just had this V reversal. I mean, we got so oversold in such a short period of time in Q4, and I think underlying that initial strength in January, we started seeing the data in the U.S. kind of weakening, too.
Plus, you had the Fed gone, right? December, they were on overdrive.
Yeah, the dovish pivot, I think, had a lot to do with that.
And by the way, speaking of the Fed guy, Dami, if we have this chart, and I'm going to just kind of throw an audible out here. Omaha, which is the three-month yield against the yield on the 10-year.
Negative.
Because, correct, positive. Jerome Powell said that's what you want to watch is not the 30-10, but the three-month 10-year, Guy Adami. What is that telling us?
It tells you that global economies are slowing down in a meaningful way. When 24% of global sovereign bonds have negative yields, that's problematic. Now, stock markets until today have not cared. I think they better wake up and start to care because it augurs something really bad. So that number doesn't seem to be getting better. It seems to be getting worse by the day. So again, inverted yield curves historically have not been particularly bullish.
As preposterous as it may sound to people, especially as we talk about this, we have an 80% probability of a 25 basis point hike by year end. We also talked about bond yields, and you know, not everything is going lower.
Hold on,
in Europe.
Cut,
in fact,
cut by year end. An 80% cut by year end.
By year end. But what we look in Italy, you see BTP yields actually are wider by 12 bips against bonds today. Where is BTP land? That's Italy. That's a place where actually slower growth actually gets you to a place where people start to really be concerned about credit risks around the world. European banks hate negative yields.
And
are getting destroyed. And if you look at big, you know, as we've talked about this triple B threat in terms of credit land, all of these massive companies that are just a notch above junk, if we are really phasing kind of this low growth or downshifting as much as we're all talking about, this isn't about playing defense into better equities. This is about a very difficult time ahead.
And it's truly amazing, and not to jump the gun, but tomorrow on another 5 a.m. show, we're going to actually talk about the Italian banks, which have been quietly just obliterated in the last month or so. So we look at a negative yield on the 10-year note in Germany, Karen. The idea is I lend you money, you give me some money back to compensate me for my risk. People in Germany are now paying to borrow money. How insane is that?
This is not Italy.
This is the fourth biggest economy in the world with a negative yield on its biggest debt.
I don't know how to. There's a lot of weird things going on. Guy and I were talking about this in the green room. If I had told you 10 years ago in 2008 we would have a 10-year run of expansion, right? The market would be here. And the 10-year bond would be at 2, I don't know where it ended up closing today.
226. You would say,
that's not possible. Those three things together, a 10-year run, stock market, you're all time
high. Well, throw in 2% inflation and then where are real rates?
I mean, that's really what I'm saying. Thank you, Karen. You cleaned it up because I'm, you know, this market environment is really, I hate to be, you know, sort of TB hyperbole, unlike any
that we
have seen in decades.
I've been doing this
20 years. I can't remember when all of those things you just mentioned were happening at the same time.
All of these things are a function, though, of a Federal Reserve that doesn't care about throwing as much money at the problem as they can. And that's why you have this cross current of actually bond yields that are going lower. By the way, a credit scare is the worst thing you can have. And obviously, if we want to look in the history books, we can look straight to Japan and see where we are dealing right now with the central bank that threw way too much money at the problem. So I'm not saying we're Japan. I can tell you right now, deflation is as important of an issue right now, folks, as inflation.
And quickly, we got to bring up Deutsche Bank. We're not bringing up today. This is something we've talked about on this desk now. Literally for years, the stock closed just above $7. And again, everybody, when I say everybody, the market seems to think that Deutsche Bank is Deutsche Bank specific. I am not certain of that. As a matter of fact, I'll say it again. If Deutsche Bank was a U.S. bank, I think we'd talk about it every day. And to think that Deutsche Bank is by itself just its own problem, I think is foolish. They have the largest derivatives book in the history of mankind. There has to be some systemic risk there.
And what is that? What is the
systemic
risk?
Well, you look at Citibank, for example, now trading $64 and trading just right around-ish tangible book. You wonder, with Citibank probably having the most exposure to Europe, is the weakness in Citibank over the last couple weeks and until recently the last couple years trying to tell you something?
All right, guys, good macro discussion there. Well, your next guest says that it's time to get defensive and brace for what he calls a sloppy summer. Let's bring in Steve Chevron. He is portfolio manager and equity strategist at Federated Investors. Steve, good to see you again.
Brian, it's nice to see you in the daylight.
It is really. It's nice to see me in the daylight as well. Here's the thing, though, okay? This is, as we just noted, a market which has got so many things going on that seem a little, to Karen's point, weird, right? There's a lot of confluences that are happening that you normally don't see together. As a fund manager, how do you manage through this? Is it more cash? Are you buying utilities?
I don't think you change your stock bond call here down 5%. And the reason why is we view trade as being a 5 to 10% event, not taking us back to the December lows, because in December you had the Fed on the wrong side of things, you had economic data in free fall, and earnings estimates were rolling over, and none of those are in place today. However, within your equity allocation, we think there's things you can do to be more defensive. So you talked about dividend plays. Look, the 10-year went from 3.25 to 2.3. That benefits those parts of the market. They're a little bit less volatile, you know, when you have this kind of volatility over the summer. But there's some areas that have actually gotten beaten up that might have some opportunities as well. So we talk about small caps, which sounds ridiculous because you say these are the most cyclical of names. But 50% of their funding is variable rate bank debt. So when the 10-year yield goes from 3.25 to 2.25, that's a direct improvement in their cash flow. And we think that considering that they're down 5% so far this year with the S&P down 3, there's a little bit of an opportunity there. And we also think, look, you've got over 50% of the S&P 500, 10% or more below its 52-week size. Put together your list of favorite names. Look, if it's Alphabet, fine. If it's the semiconductors, which I know Chris Rowan's going to talk about later, put together your list and start picking away when you think that these things have gotten overdone, because we don't think that you have the end of the bull market run here. We just think that you've got a difficult and sloppy summer where the upside's capped and the downside is a little bit as well.
Well, Steve, I listened to you talk about, though, President Trump and Xi are in an endurance test, as you say, on some level. That doesn't sound like something that's going to end anytime soon. We set up the show. Karen talked about damage that may not be transitory. You have a dynamic here where I think the leading indicators, if you look at business confidence, if you listen to CEOs, they're retrenching at a time when even if you get a trade deal, as we've kind of seen even with that global synchronized growth, even when we actually thought we were getting a trade deal 3 months ago, it's not like you went back to the races again. And if anything, you've seen the weaker players like Europe, like some parts of Asia, like emerging markets, look at EM currencies, tell you it's not going to be an easy road back.
Tim, I think when you take a step back, what's happening on trade is the U.S. and China are negotiating terms of coexistence. You have an ascendant economic power and an established one. And the terms that the U.S. has offered so far is, look, you either allow us to protect our intellectual property and we're complementary economies that grow together, or we're going to try to crush you. And when the president ripped up the red line edits from the Chinese the other day, he killed the market consensus, which was that he was going to take a soybean deal. And what he did was he automatically increased the odds of a substantive deal and no deal at the same time. And so I think what you're dealing with now is more risk to the downside if something doesn't get done, but more upside if a deal actually takes place, because it's not going to be a nothing deal. Ultimately, when you buy a stock, you're buying the future earnings of that company discounted back. If we protect our intellectual property, that's a better bet to buy. So if this actually does lead to a deal, which is our base case, this could all be worth it.
Let me ask you, when you talk about small caps, Russell 2000 is a defensive. I think of that as more of an aggressive, right? They're smaller companies that tend to be able to not withstand some of the macro events as well.
So I think there's two themes here that we're trying to play on. The first one is that you've got this sloppy summer, as we call it, to give it a kind of cute term. But then we think that the economy is stabilizing and can reaccelerate in the back half of the year, and there's some cyclicality to those names. They've underperformed a little bit, and they're more rate sensitive than you think. So they benefit from the lower rates. They can rebound. And we think that combination, you may have some time, but it'll end up working.
Steve Chevron, really good discussion there. Steve, we'll see you soon. Thank you very much. Federated
Thanks,
Investors. All right, so guys, let's trade that talk. I mean, is everybody can pile into utilities guy, and then all of a sudden you're trading at 20 times forward earnings on a regulated utility. That doesn't work
either. Doesn't make any sense at all.
No.
No, and I think to my comment at the top of the show, I think that's problematic. I think people are looking in the wrong place. Steve mentioned the Russell, and let's just play the devil's advocate real quick. The IWM, the Russell 2000, that topped out with the S&P in the fall around 175, fell off a cliff like everything else. But the rally back did not trade on par with the S&P. As a matter of fact, we didn't get anywhere close to where it should have been if it traded with the S&P 500. To me, and I think to Karen's point, I think that sort of bodes for further downside in the IWM, which to me leads the S&P lower as well.
I think it's dangerous to be running into consumer staples and utilities with valuations that make no sense. So I'm not a believer in Procter & Gamble at these levels. I'm not a believer in Clorox. I'm not a believer in a lot of these names that really have difficult justifications for valuations here. If we go into a serious growth period, I think what we've seen is during periods where you've actually been kind of sideways in terms of expectations, you've had an ability to trade at a higher multiple for the S&P.
Just quickly, Dan,
I don't see that.
Do you think we get a rate cut this year?
Yeah, it seems very likely.
There's a 50% chance we're 50 basis points lower by January, according to Fed Funds Futures right now.
50 for 50 basis
50
points.
50 for 50. So a half a point by January is half the market's bet right now.
Well, then you got to think a chance of a 25 point is higher than that.
86%.
Fed cutting twice is not good news, no matter how you slice this.
All right. Coming up, check out shares of Workday earnings just out. The conference call underway. We'll give you the headlines you care about ahead. Plus, a riddle. How could Facebook both win and lose in the social media war? Stick around for the answer, Tim. And later, Beyond Meat have really been cooking. Up nearly 250% since going public, and one top analyst thinks the name may just be starting to heat up. We got those details. So where is the beef? Of course, it's right here. And we're back right after this. All right, good evening and welcome back to Fast Money. We have got an earnings alert for you. It is on Workday. Let's go to Deirdre Bosa in San Francisco with more. Deirdre.
Hey, Brian. Workday bouncing around in the after hours, even as the executive team raised guidance on the conference call. These are not major moves. So considering that the stock is up more than 35% this year and trading near record highs since the start of 2017, shares have tripled. Now, Workday is part of the high-flying enterprise cloud software group that has been on a tear this year. And CEO Anil Bhusri telling our Jim Cramer that their early start in the cloud has helped sign on the biggest companies in the world. Have a listen.
All these companies are going through a transformation, a digital transformation for their HR and finance operations. We were fortunate to get an early start in the cloud. We have an architecture that scales to the largest companies in the world. Companies like Walmart and Amazon use Workday. And so it gives these companies comfort that we can get there. And we've done it all with a natural cloud architecture. And we do it with high levels of customer satisfaction.
Now, Bhusri telling analysts on the earnings call just now that the companies, some of those companies continue to expand their relationships with Workday beyond their HR products into their newer financial management products. And they plan to establish leadership positions in this space, a financial product space, before developing a new product or growth engine. Now, guys, you can catch Bhusri's full interview with Cramer on Mad Money tonight. Back over to you, Brian.
Yeah, big interview there at 6 o'clock. Deirdre, thank you very much. All right, guys, let's trade it. The stock up 33% this year. Revenue, though, growth is slowing. 68% revenue growth 4 years ago, down to 37, now in the high 20s. Dan, your thoughts on what?
Well, it's interesting. You know, we've seen some of these recent IPOs come, these tech IPOs, and a lot of the reason for them not trading particularly well is that they're not profitable. And I think it's really important to remember that while Workday is this amazingly transformative company and they have this massive secular shift, they're talking about how they're basically taking all these processes in HR and in finance and they're putting it on the cloud and they're doing a subscription thing. This company is expected to do $4 billion in sales this year, like you said, decelerating. But on a GAAP basis, they're actually losing money. They're going to lose about $500 million in net income. And I think it's really important to remember that here's a stock that, like you said, is up 33%. It's up 80% since its lows in November. At some point, the chickens are going to come home to roost for a company who's got decelerating growth, trading about 11 times sales and 100 times earnings.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they're going to make about $1.35 this year, and they are making some money, the fact that they are in such deep markets and they have such an experienced management team is the reason why the stock trades at the premium it does. And that's, you know, frankly, that's half the reason you want to own this company right there. But the multiple at some point really matters. Everything we just said in the A block in terms of high multiple stocks, what did we see happen the last time stocks got hit on a growth scare?
But the multiple, the reason I referenced the declining revenue growth was that multiples matter more when revenue growth is slowing. Multiples don't matter until they do.
So explain to me this then. Why in the why after a day where the market reverses 300 Dow points, when this is trading 95 times next year's numbers at the multiple to sales that you just mentioned, when they guide in line to slightly lower, this stock should be down 5% and it's basically unchanged, having made an all-time high. It doesn't make a lot of sense. That's something to watch on tomorrow. If they can't sell this stock off on the back of that, on this tape, maybe it should be going higher.
Well, you can increase your earnings by more than that, though. By even if your growth is slowing, you can increase your earnings by a greater, you know, you just have more operating leverage. All that having been said, though, this is growth at an extraordinary price.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a phenomenal company, but it's really hard to feel.
You just got levitate. Listen, growth, you throw cloud in, you add your multiple. This show from henceforth should be called Cloud Fast Money or Fast Cloud Money or whatever it is.
Extraordinary price.
What are you doing counting on your
fingers? I'm just trying to, you know, come up with a new acronym for growth at extraordinary price.
Because we, you
know, GURP?
GURP.
GURP.
I'm going to stop trying.
Excuse me. All right, still ahead. The chips are down, literally. Semis on track for their worst month in more than a decade, but there may be some good news out there. We'll tell you what it is ahead. I'm Brian Sullivan. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC, and here's what else is in the hopper.
It was the heat of the moment.
Yep. Beyond Meat is heating up after its hot IPO. And one top analyst will explain why the sizzle is just getting started. Plus, Bitcoin fever is back.
Don't tell me. I've been a FOMO for the rest of my life.
The cryptocurrency is soaring back to its highest level in a year. We'll tell you what's behind the move. There's much more Fast Money right after this. I say it loud, I'm Latino and proud.
All right, welcome back to Fast Money. There has been no group of stocks hit harder lately than the semiconductors, seen as losers on all sides of the trade fight. Dominic Chu, back at CNBC HQ, with just how much the chips are down.
Well, chip crash, semiconductor slump, whatever you want to call it, Brian, it's been tough sledding for the industry overall as it remains firmly situated in the whole U.S.-China trade war story. Now, it's pretty clear how much the trade headlines matter to chip stocks, with the VanEck Vector Semiconductor ETF, that ticker SMH, now down around 18% or so from its record high that we saw back on April 24th. Even with that decline, though, it's still up around 13% year-to-date. Among some of the more well-known larger-cap semi names to get hit this month, you've got Intel, which is down just around 15% for the month of May. Broadcom is down around 20%. Same goes with NVIDIA. Micron is down around 21%. And Qualcomm, the worst-performing stock in this ETF, down 23% or so, driven lower in large part by that federal judge ruling that it acted with an anti-competitive manner with how it charged licensing fees to certain customers. Now, an honorable mention here to Advanced Micro Devices on its stock surge today as some traders get more optimistic and bullish about AMD's newest slate of chip offerings. The move means AMD is the only stock in this ETF that is positive on that month-to-date basis. Just one final point with regard to the negativity in technology. Apple, not a straight story about U.S.-China trade, but it's still become somewhat of a proxy of those headlines. Brian, it's down around 16% since its intraday high back on May 1st. So Apple, chips, China, trade, it's all one big clump. Back over to you.
Yeah, it's all one big clump that has been compressed inside the bag. Dominic Chu, thank you very much. All right, Karen Feinerman, let's trade this. Any reason to own this group? Fundamentally, we'll get to the technicals in a second.
Well, you got to really believe, I think, in a trade deal. You got to really believe in a trade deal soon, I think, actually. So I don't know. That seems that could happen. I think there's other better risk rewards. It's come down a long way.
The president
way,
just
I know,
said a couple of days ago, we're, quote, not ready.
Not ready.
To make a deal.
Right. That doesn't make me really excited to jump in. If I had to, maybe I'd own some Cisco. I don't know.
So if you look at semiconductors, they're down 14% against the S&P in 23 sessions. It tells you just how much the market is pricing in. This also comes after Q1 earnings. Q1 earnings, where we heard from Texas Instruments, we heard from Intel, we heard from a handful of guys just how cyclical and how cyclically bad the sector was, at least for a couple more quarters. That's independent of a trade war. That was based upon inventories and restocking and ultimately where they saw their business model. So if you look at the drawdown in the first quarter of 2018, really into the second quarter as we started to get the first announcements of trade war, this drawdown from the highs 23 sessions ago has exceeded it, and it tells you that I think you could go lower.
I agree with Tim. April 24th, Texas Instruments report, stock's trading 119. I said, shocking that the stock is actually higher on the back of this quarter. Major double top, now here we're at 103. But that came on the heels of Micron saying similar, and obviously Intel saying similar as well. So I agree with Tim. I think, listen, trade deal, no trade deal, there are other headwinds going on right now, which means these stocks go lower from here.
I think AMD proves, though, today that there's some special situations. I think Qualcomm could be really interesting. Back in April, we know when Qualcomm settled that deal with Apple, signed a six-year licensing agreement, getting paid by Apple also to settle this dispute. Stock went to $90. Now here it is back at $65. We know why. Dom just mentioned that FTC suit. I think there's some probably interesting entry points not too far from here, somewhere near.
Listen, the average price target on Intel, 37 analysts. The average target's $53. Stock's at 43. So either the analyst community's going to have to start bringing their estimates down, or someone's going to have to come out there and get more bullish on the name. All right. Well, your next guest says the worst may be over for semiconductors, and it could be time to start dipping into the chips. Chris Verone, head of technical analysis at Strategus, is going off the charts for us at the Plasma. Chris, give investors in this group some much-needed decent news.
Hey, Brian. Yeah, so listen, I think what's notable about the semis here is the change in attitude among investors so quickly. And let's just look at the chart here. This is the SOX. This is the ETF. I think we need to remember that V-tops are very rare in this business. It's only a month ago the semis broke to really new all-time highs. They've had a sharp drawdown. But we have them back at support near the 200-day moving average. And I think what's most important, when you look at sentiment, put volume has absolutely surged. This is a record in put volume, so people betting prices lower. That's a contrarian signal. This is a record. We think we're pretty close here to some type of a tradable low. And I think when you look internally at the group, percent of stocks above their 50-day moving average is also very washed out here. Under 10% of stocks in the semis above their 50-day moving average. So again, we have them back at support. Internal conditions are as washed out as we've seen since December. This can take a couple days or even a couple weeks, but we think we're in the ballpark of some tradable low here. Now, what names in particular really flag in our work? This is TXN. I think the question here is this just some big top that's taken shape over the last 18 months? I don't think we know yet. And I think what we do know is with an RSI near 30 and right back at the 200, we can at least play for some type of a bounce here and evaluate the character of that bounce. Then we look at a name like an ADI, which is frankly still, frankly, a very strong trend. It's been lower left to upper right, really for the better part of the last couple years. You have a 30 RSI, so oversold, again, back at the 200-day moving average. I think both of these names, TXN and ADI, are two we can take a shot on the long side. What we're skeptical of, though, are stocks that are in established downtrends that never made new highs earlier this year. I think the best example of that is NVIDIA, failed right at the downward sloping 200-day moving average. So the trend here is still down. The 50 remains below the 200-day. Rallies and downtrends, you sell. So I think be selective here. Texas, ADI, okay. Be skeptical of NVDA.
Chris, come on over. Thank you very much. Good analysis there. You saw, guys, I mean, that SMH was sitting right on the 200-day moving average. All those technical indicators, maybe worth a little bit of a gamble here? Take a chance?
Well, if there's an entry point, to Chris's point, 200-day moving average is as good as any. My pushback would be, and Dan has mentioned this, these things don't typically last a quarter. These slowdowns typically last anywhere from 4 to 5 quarters, and we're in quarter 2 of a slowdown. So I think there's further room to the downside.
Yeah, you know, I'll just mention this. I mean, a lot of people are waiting for these things to fall into their lap, mm-hmm. and you may just get them the way where you don't want them. And I think that NVIDIA looks like, if that goes back to those lows from January, it is lights out for this group. And just the other thing is like, listen, if Apple is the last battle that's going to be fought in this trade war, how do you think they're going to absorb those tariffs initially? They're going to push it through to their suppliers, right, and squeeze their suppliers. So I think the semi space, I think you want to be very careful here until we know that we have a substantive deal.
I think the call here is when we look at how big tops take shape, it's typically not a V. You don't get very many V-shaped tops in this business. And we have a condition now where sentiment, I could even just tell from the desk here, has changed pretty dramatically on this group from just a couple months ago. And when you get these huge spikes in put volume, you have to at least entertain the idea that there's another side to this trade. They've hit these things hard over the last month. We know that. But 10% of stocks above their 50-day, that's about as washed out as we've been since December. I at least think you get some type of tradable bounce here.
So let me ask you, earlier when I said Cisco, I meant to say Intel. Intel here, that quarter was awful, but this stock hasn't, this stock hasn't been here in a long time. Certainly this valuation, what do you think?
You know, I think the problem with the stock is the stock's been pretty awful for a long period of time. I mean, we've been consistently wrong, frankly, on Intel over the last number of quarters. Every time it looks like it wants to bounce, it's been pretty disappointing. I just think there are better opportunities. Mm-hmm. Like, an ADI is a stock in an uptrend that has had a good shakeout back to support. That's more timely.
Chris, quickly, can the overall market move up if the semiconductors do not?
No, I think what's curious here is you have the overall market down 4, semis down 15. I would be really curious if semis actually start to outperform, even if the broader market gets hit here. That would tell me a lot of bad news has been discounted in these really broken groups. I think the jury is out on that, but it's certainly top of our radar in terms of what we care about.
All right, Chris Ferrone, good stuff there on a sector that really matters. Chris, thank you. All right, coming up, Facebook, Snap, Twitter, soaring this year. But a new study suggests that it could be about to get very awkward for these social stocks. We've got those details. Plus, Beyond Meat surging today and now up nearly 250% from its IPO. Wall Street jumping fully on the beefless bandwagon. We'll tell you why some say that stock could keep sizzling. We're back when Fast Money returns. All right, welcome back. Social media stocks have been on fire so far this year. Facebook, Snap, Twitter, all up double digits. In fact, Snapchat has doubled. But a new report suggests users may be logging out, at least in some areas. And it answers our earlier riddle. Can Facebook both win and lose the social media wars? Let's get more now on this with Julia Boorstin, who is out in our Los Angeles bureau. Julia.
Well, Brian, the average time American adults spent on Facebook last year actually declined, and it sounds like it's only going to get worse. This according to an eMarketer survey, which projects that engagement, that's the amount of time spent on Facebook, will flatline this year at 38 minutes. Now, this is after declining by 3 minutes between 2017 and 2018, eMarketer projecting another minute decline in 2020. And time spent on Snapchat is projected to continue to flatline at 26 minutes, while Instagram bucks the trend, getting users to spend an extra minute every year between 2017 and 2021. So why is Facebook seeing a continual decline? eMarketer says it's due to Facebook downranking clickbait posts and videos in favor of more personal updates that are what the company calls time well spent. Now, we don't yet know how Facebook's changes to prioritize private messaging over the news feed will further impact the way that the company can advertise and will impact both the way users spend time on the platform as well as how Facebook can reach consumers in terms of advertising. We don't know yet what that will mean for the company's top line growth. So as to the question of why Snap is stagnating, eMarketer attributes this to the lingering fallout from the app redesign that was about a year ago. Now, despite ongoing questions about the stagnating user base of all of these social companies, their stocks have been on fire. As you mentioned, Brian, Facebook, in part bolstered by the potential in Instagram, has seen its stock shoot up over 40% this year. Snap is up 110%, rebounding from last year's declines. And don't forget Twitter, as it focuses on daily active user growth rather than its flatlining monthly users. Its stock is up about 30% year to date. Brian, over to you.
Yeah, really interesting stuff there. Julia Boorstin, thank you very much. So Snapchat's flatlining, but the stock has doubled, Dan Nathan. Facebook, $218 last year, sitting on its 50 or 200-day moving average at $180. What do you see for Facebook? What do you see for Snapchat?
So it's interesting you mentioned that high from last July. It was the all-time high heading into their Q2 print when they had that huge guide down. I think it's really important to remember that for 2019, I think EPS was expected to grow at least 20% right now. Right now, analysts have 2019 EPS declining 2%, despite the fact that they're still going to see 20%+ sales growth. So here's the thing. When you think out to 2020, this stock trades at about 20 times expected earnings. If you think that this is sort of a trough year as far as earnings and their spend, and then they have this business cycle or this business transition more towards direct marketing, I think when you look at that data, you should be happy that Instagram's growing. You should not care as much that Facebook is, because it's going to close that gap at some point. The stock's probably kind of cheap here.
So I think the stock trades cheap, as it always has, and therefore it's not a reason to jump in. I think it can be defensive in an environment where, you know, 22% growth at a 26 I see multiple. But it gets down to, where's the trust factor with Facebook? Their new private conversations business is arguably a new business model. But to throw this company, you know, in a place where you'd be concerned about them in the short run, You can't do that.
The government is concerned. Powerful members in D.C. have talked about it. Facebook has basically begged the government, Guy Dami,
yes, sir,
regulate us. So they're asking to be regulated.
Regulate everybody else.
And we talk about banks too big to fail. Are they too big to grow?
Because the big guys want to be regulated, because it knocks out the little guys. The big guys are the ones that are best suited to handle regulation, right? So it's probably in their best interest to be regulated, because then you knock out all
the competition. They have 100 lawyers and nobody else can afford it.
With that said, I think to Tim's point, I mean, this stock was $125 stock at its trough in December, traded up to 200. If you're looking for a level to buy it, I'll give it to you. I think it comes in around 162, and I think that's where we're headed after a 184 close.
All right. Facebook down. Let's move on. Beyond Meat has been beyond belief. And you may not believe just how big one analyst sees the so-called alt-meat industry getting. Plus, Bitcoin coming off a wild holiday weekend, soaring close to 9,000. The bulls are back. But are they about to get pushed back in the pen? Well, fake meat has been making real profit for early investors. Beyond Meat shares up just under 8% today. And there may be no cow in the product, but there's another bull on the street. J.P. Morgan Chase starting coverage with an overweight rating. The analyst behind the note spoke to Power Lunch about what he calls an extraordinary growth opportunity in an industry that could be on the move to as much as $100 billion.
I think the most important thing to look at is the long-term potential. And the most important thing in the long-term potential is how big is this sector, alt meat, whatever we want to call it, plant-based meat, going to be. Beyond will get whatever percentage of that it is, but when you start looking at some of the numbers and how big plant-based dairy has become, for example, it seems pretty clear plant-based meat could be enormous.
Now, Beyond Meat also announcing that it will begin production in Europe next year. Okay, guys, can this stock, can this industry
alt meat, guys,
really
alt
live
meat
up to this hype?
Alt meat.
Can I just answer for a second?
Karen's in.
So, I mean, okay, I appreciate the JP Morgan guy being so bullish, especially up here. They were involved with the pricing of this thing, were they not? May 1st at $25 or wherever it was. Yeah,
25.
Up from the range of like 16 to 18. So I don't know. Maybe it's in there. Maybe.
The one thing I've noticed about Beyond Meat, and I don't want to take anything away from the stock move, it's made people money, is this, guy, is that if you look at, I looked at a few other companies with a similar market cap, about $4.5 billion. They have 2 to 3 times more stock outstanding. Foot Locker, Floor, names like that have a lot more stock outstanding, multiples more than Beyond Meat. Is Beyond Meat's success partly because there's so little
scarcity
of equity, which doesn't necessarily mean the business is that good?
To your point about scarcity value, didn't we see something in this Porsche and Volkswagen, wasn't it? Remember that whole ridiculousness?
That was a short squeeze, yes.
But to your point, though, you could have a situation like that. The addressable market of this could be ridiculous. But have we heard doctors talk about any of the health concerns?
Yeah, that was a horrible analogy, the Porsche one.
The analogy is such, there's a scarcity factor. When there's scarcity factor.
How about the analogy to Tyson, to Hormel, to Pilgrim's Pride? All these companies that are trading at bloated multiples, the food companies are a mess right now. So why, I get it's an alt market, but why wouldn't every other food company in the world who are bigger, who have more
because
distribution,
the point I was
be getting some piece of this market?
57 million outstanding shares on a $4.5 billion company.
I get your point, so I'm with you.
My point,
I'm
is it just being traded? Is it being bought or is it being traded? You get
no,
the
it's,
difference.
It's people that are buying Levi Strauss for the first time again, too, because it's a limited size. I agree with that. But ultimately, get to the fundamentals of alt meat and a $1 billion industry where barriers to entry for the biggest companies in the world, it's not going to be that high of a margin, and it gets to be absurd, which I think it is right now.
What's absurd is that you just used fundamentals of alt meat as a real sentence.
Look, man, you started it. I'm just trying to do some TV here, man. Just
doing it well, Tim.
Thanks.
A lot of people on the radio. Don't forget about them.
We love them.
Channel 112, SiriusXM.
They say you have a face for radio.
Oh, and a body for it, too. JP Morgan not alone today in getting bullish on Beyond Meat. Some options traders are betting on the stock's monster run to continue as well. Dan Nathan, king of the one-liners, has a special options action
very
for you
special,
now.
Very special, Brian. Here's the thing. You asked the question, are they trading or are they buying it? Today, options traders were clearly trading the stock's momentum. It was about 1.5 times average daily volume. Obviously, it doesn't have a lot of history here. Right out of the gate at 9:30, there was a buyer of 500 of the May 31st weekly Friday expiration, 93 calls playing $1 for those. Obviously, that was a trade just on a very short dated basis. But traders are really going to start focus on their first earnings report. That could change the narrative. That's next week, June 6th, after the close. The options market right now, with the stock closing at $86, is implying about a 16% move in either direction. That's the June 7th weekly straddle. If you bought that and you bought the implied movement between now and next Friday, you'd need a 14% move all the way up to 100 on the upside or down to about 72 on the downside to make money. So the options market is implying huge movement in this name over the next week and a half.
I will say Credit Suisse, just for balance, initiated neutral. $70 price target, Goldman Sachs neutral with a $67 price tag. And I can tell you, if you enjoy Beyond Meat, you will enjoy a rather large movement one way or the other.
Nobody? Nothing?
You don't have a comment about that. You have a comment about my
that was genius
admin.
Little...
And then you got that.
Yeah.
For more options action, you can check out the full show.
Wow.
5:30 on a Friday. I got an emoji in my head, Guy. Which one am I thinking about?
I don't know.
All right,
Brian.
Check out Bitcoin. Cooling off a bit today after a red-hot holiday weekend. What's behind the comeback, and is there maybe a better option than Bitcoin? We'll talk altcoins live at the NASDAQ. Stick around. Well, so far, it's shaping up to be a pretty hot late spring, early summer for Bitcoin, with the cryptocurrency or commodity, whatever you want to call it, just inches from hitting 9,000 for the first time since last April. Bitcoin is up nearly 130% this year, investors dipping their toes back into the crypto market. But is the Bitcoin boom back for real? Or really, Tim, is this kind of a case of investor FOMO, fear of missing out, trading? Currency fears over the trade war.
I think there's a little bit of everything in here for people, including, and Brian talked about last week, there's even some supply dynamics here, which have, you know, outstanding supply be half of what it was. I think you had the conference here 2 weeks ago. You had every Lambo or now Volkswagen driving crypto person. And you also have a dynamic where we are seeing gold, we are seeing other kind of forms of flight to safety rallying. Look at dollar yen. Look at, you know, what we're talking about in bond yield. So it makes some sense. And technically, you know, frankly, you got to a place where really you had driven away all the actual sellers in the market.
We know how much demand comes from Asia. And one of the wonkiest but most interesting WBI, wonky but interesting charts out there, maybe the Chinese yuan versus Bitcoin, because it does this.
Inverted. This was from Top Gun. We were inverted, and then you remember that whole scene? Yeah. Now Goose and
you can fly with me anytime.
I'm the wrong person to speak to Bitcoin, but I'll say this. If you didn't have a name in front of it, just looked at the chart, you would say this stock is broken through key resistance on the upside. It goes higher.
By the way, Ether up 220% this year, and Litecoin, or off its lows in December, Litecoin's up 440%.
By the way, there's a reason why.
Sell the house, sell the car, sell the kids, buy Litecoin. All right, up next, your final trades. Time for your final trades. Let's go around the horn. Tim Seymour.
We talked about defensive yield plays in the opening block, and I talked about a company like AT&T whose debt load could be a consideration, except less exposure to trade war.
Karen.
Yes, I'm sticking with one of the few things working in my portfolio right now, Google, Alphabet, okay. He's Power Pit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got three for three on that one, Dan.
Yeah, fast pitch. Hey, TLT, if it gets through 130, I think the 20-year bond ETF has gone back to the 2016 highs at 140.
Wow, bonds moving up. Gee.
Dollar Gen in earnings. I'll see you 11 hours from now, no doubt on the TV.
You waxing?
No. Yeah. Brian is.
He will be. He will be. We're going to call you in there. Thanks for watching. Mad Money with Jim Cramer begins right now.